This is a special edition of Macro Voices with hedge fund manager Eric Townsend, the premier financial podcast targeting professional finance, high net worth individuals, family offices, and other sophisticated investors. Now, for this special edition of Macro Voices, here's hedge fund manager Eric Townsend.
Macro Voices All-Stars episode number 25 was recorded on July 2nd, 2019. I'm Eric Townsend. All-Star Danielle DiMartino Booth is back with us today. Danielle, since we had you on the program last, a few things have changed. We've had the G20 meeting. We've had a resumption of a connection, it seems, between Trump and Xi. We've had a little field trip to the demilitarized zone in Korea. What's your current thinking based on all these new developments?
I wish I could say that I saw a lot new in the developments, but I think that the fact is we've bizarrely got soybeans having barely moved and copper prices being down. So I didn't mean to jump into the weeds literally that quickly, but the indicators that would suggest any kind of forward movement, aside from maybe some semiconductor stock prices, they indicate that not much really came out of the G20. And in the meantime, we have continued to see deterioration in the global data. So it's listening to bubble vision. It's getting more and more difficult to listen to the pundits say that it's just so awesome that the United States can stay decoupled forever. I don't buy it.
Danielle, give us the rundown. What are some of those developments?
What I like to do every month when the international numbers hit on the PMIs, it's kind of like the race to get to the United States number, the big ISM. I like to look at them very agnostically and just put them together in a big mixing bowl and count the number that were positive and count the number that were negative. And if you remember that great global reflation, $2.1 trillion record quantitative easing year of 2017, yes, I'm not conflating, Eric. I put the two together on purpose. Record levels of global QE did not coincide with a record percentage of countries having positive expanding PMIs, positive expanding factory sectors, aside from the one exception of South Africa that particular year. The two went hand in hand. And now that stimulus measures have come off, you fast forward to today, and as of June's data, we have 60% of the countries with contracting factory sectors. So 60% of the globe right now is falling into contraction. I cannot overstate the importance of this because so many of the countries that are in this situation are great, big, gigantic producing nations, Japan, Germany. So I prefer to look at it as if you get to 75% or so say come July or August, we're in a global recession. And you know, if you look at even the entrails of the ISM report that was greeted here in the United States with such relief on Monday because it stayed in the positive territory and new orders was only 50 on the head. So it wasn't contracting and it wasn't expanding, but by golly, it was much more important that it wasn't contracting. Dig into those numbers. You don't want to see prices received crashing. You don't want to see export orders dipping below the zero line. That means we're not decoupling. And you don't want to see your second consecutive month of negative backlogs, contracting backlogs, because there's no more surefire indicator of future demand than what your order book looks like into the future. So we're definitely not decoupling is my point. And I think that investors should be paying attention to how the global slowdown has begun to seriously manifest here in the United States.
Danielle, I'm seeing all kinds of conflicting information in the data. For example, you know, consumer confidence seems to be at all-time highs, yet there's a lot of other indicators that suggest, as you just suggested, that maybe we shouldn't be so confident. What's going on here? What can we expect next? What do we make of the seemingly conflicting data, and which data should we be paying the most attention to?
Well, so I think that we are at a very critical inflection point. We have seen record levels of mergers and acquisitions. So I would anticipate that, you know, with 12 full months of year-on-year increases in layoffs, I would suggest that that is a reflection of what happens in the aftermath of great big mergers, and that is layoffs and extracting those synergies. And lo and behold, that is indeed what the Challenger layoff data has shown. And I think we've gotten to the point, you know, the same way that I put all of the global PMIs into a big mixing bowl, I do the same exercise every week with initial jobless claims. And what's interesting is that in the month of June, we're now at DEFCON 2 levels. And I say DEFCON 2, meaning if 50% or more of states have rising jobless claims year over year, rising is bad. You don't want to see rising. Then we're at the point where we really should be paying attention, especially when five of the biggest automobile producing states in the nation. You've got Texas in there. You've got New York in there. Those are two of the most populous states in the nation. So there's definitely some give in the labor market. And despite these record confidence levels that you rightly cite, Eric, it's interesting that if you query Americans about jobs availability, if you ask them, hey, how hard is it to get a job? In the latest confidence readings we got from University of Michigan, we saw a 4.6 point increase in your average working Jane and Joe's perceptions of job availability. We've seen an increase of that magnitude. I hate to be in the weeds here, but this is really important. We've seen an increase of that magnitude six other times since data began to be collected in 1980. In every single six instances, in the same exact month. In other words, in that month of the month of June, we've seen the unemployment rate increase by about four tenths of a percentage point. That is not something, whether it's June or July, that these markets are prepared for in any way. And by the way, it has nothing to do with the trade deal, and nor does it reflect the strongest economy in U.S. history.
Speaking of the greatest economy in U.S. history, I just read on Twitter this morning, Danielle, that is 100% thanks to the efforts of the president. He just said so himself on Twitter. And of course, that is definitive. But something else that he's been very vocal about, of course, we have the whole concept of the Fed is it's an independent entity, which they went to great lengths to structure it as technically not really even part of the government, to make sure it's independent and can't be influenced unduly by the government. The whole point of independence is to make sure that that monetary policy is not affected by politics. But President Trump is really making some pretty strong noises about firing Jay Powell, even though he has absolutely no legal authority to do so. And something I've noticed is that legal authority or not, presidents of the United States have a heck of a lot of power. If he wants Powell out, he could probably pressure him out somehow. Is this something we need to really think about, that this rift between President Trump and Jay Powell is going to lead to either changes at the Fed or a change in the Fed's behavior? Or is it reasonable to assume that the Fed is really going to just act like an independent Fed and say, hey, Mr. President, we don't work for you?
Well, I think that there are very real risks that are emanating from this very one-sided public feud, because Jay Powell tries his best to stay above the fray whenever he's at the podium. But at this juncture, when you see things like the interview that came out a few days ago, where Art Laffer suggested that the Federal Reserve should be absorbed as part of the administration and be under the direct control of the president. I mean, these are things that make you shudder in your shoes, because monetary policy should be made independently of any entity, because they're working on behalf of we the people. The Federal Reserve Board in Washington, D.C. is a federal agency that is mandated with looking out for the best interests of the U.S. economy. That's you, that's me, that's everybody in it. It's the opposite of saying that we need to look out for the political interests of any entity. In the defense of the administration, I will say that there's been very covert politicization of the Fed since Paul Volcker left the building way back when, and that has invited the suggestion that there should be quid pro quo and that the Fed should be working for the administration. My greatest concern, though, is that if you insult an institution and if you insult an individual enough, and boy, has Trump insulted Powell and everybody who's under Powell, by the way, saying they're not our people. I mean, how offensive could you possibly be? But there's the possibility introduced that there's going to be a backfire and that the Fed could start to make policy in spite of the administration. And that's the worst outgrowth that you could see from this tempestuous relationship. The president needs to understand that had it not been for the tax cuts, that the U.S. economy would have slowed much more quickly. And that was effectively juicing the economy. To his contention that we could have been growing at 4 or 5%, I'm sorry, that's just not feasible. It just wouldn't have happened even if Jay Powell hadn't increased interest rates in 2018 four times. Was December 2018 a policy error? Possibly. But again, maybe they hiked rates one time too many to show the president, not tell, but to show the president that they were an independent institution free of any encumbrances of the White House.
Well, Danielle, I can't thank you enough for another fantastic interview, and we look forward to seeing you again in a couple of weeks. Folks, be sure to stay tuned this week over the holiday weekend. We've got a whole bunch of more content coming your way. There's going to be an All-Stars episode every single day. We've still got Juliette DeClercq and Pippa Malmgren on deck, not to mention both Energy Week and the regular Thursday night Macro Voices podcast. So we've got lots of more content coming your way, and we hope everyone enjoys the holiday weekend. For the Macro Voices Podcast Network, I'm Eric Townsend.
That concludes this edition of Macro Voices. Be sure to tune in each week to hear feature interviews with the brightest minds in finance and macroeconomics. Please register your free account at macrovoices.com. Once registered, you'll receive our free weekly Research Roundup email containing links to supporting documents from our featured guests and the very best free financial content our volunteer research team could find on the internet each week. You'll also gain access to our free research library. And the more registered users we have, the more we'll be able to recruit high-profile feature interview guests for future programs. So please register your free account today at macrovoices.com if you haven't already. You can subscribe to Macro Voices on iTunes to have Macro Voices automatically delivered to your mobile device each week free of charge. Macro Voices is presented for informational and entertainment purposes only. The information presented on Macro Voices should not be construed as investment advice. Always consult a licensed investment professional before making investment decisions. The views and opinions expressed on Macro Voices are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of the show's hosts or sponsors. Macro Voices, its producers, sponsors, and hosts, Eric Townsend, shall not be liable for losses resulting from investment decisions based on information or viewpoints presented on Macro Voices.